It's the Fight Fan with Pete Hoffman time.
Hey, like Roy Jones said, I said, y'all must have forgot. And I see you media people as well with your little clickbait headlines. But trust me, I have to make y'all remember why we the best.
I saw some criticism. People say the punches weren't really necessary.
What do you mean, why were they not necessary?
Because he was already knocked out at that point.
But the referee hadn't pulled me off. And my job is to hit somebody till the referee pulls me off. So to those people, I would say maybe don't watch him and maybe go back to soccer.
How good does it feel to be back? You know, I made history here tonight. I set another record. You know what I mean? I'm very proud of that accomplishment. The UFC, they can strip fighters and give to other fighters, make believe belts in order to replicate my champ status. But they can't give knockout victories across multiple weight divisions. Etch my name in history one more time.
WFAN and Odyssey.com.
I'm on the West Coast side. Mike Tyson should have been here anyway. He's the baddest man on the planet, right? He should have been the one. He should have been the one over here. I'm over here on the rock, huh? You guys caught me under a bad time, but you know what I'm saying? The Rock's cool. I like ballers. You know what I'm saying? But he picked the wrong side. He picked another side, so he could get it too. He could get his ass whipped too, straight up. With all due respect, he could get it too.
I definitely want to defend my 145 belt. And let's see, I'm going to talk to Dana. Dana, tomorrow I'm going to call you. We're going to have a talk. I love you, boy.
Cookie Woman is coming tomorrow. And she doesn't know what's coming. Don't blink tomorrow. Believe me, I put such a great job. Cookie Woman is coming for you.
Here's your Fight Fan host, Pete Hoffman.
This is the Fight Fan with your host, Pete Hoffman. Follow me at the Hoff WFAN, at the Fight Fan WFAN, both on Twitter, at the Fight Fan with Pete Hoffman, everywhere else on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, anything you think of, it's there. I think I have Twitter. I'm not. I probably do. This episode, we will be joined by MMA junkie, play-by-play man for CFFC, John Morgan. You know him by his blue shirt, his first question of each post-conference, each post-fight press conference, and he will join us about everything and more. He will break down what fights are real, what fights aren't real, what is true. April Fool's Day was the other day, and did I get some misinformation? Possibly. We will find that out. We will also talk about the crazy fight that happened Thursday night. CFFC 94 with the fighter losing a finger. And John Morgan will break it down for us, what he and CM Punk went through as they were commentating that fight. Not breaking news, but big news. Just the Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier trilogy is officially on. Dustin Poirier has signed it. This is what he wanted to do. July 10th looks like the date that they're shooting for or that they're scheduled for. So that is incredible. Interesting that the rumor is that Dustin chose this over a title fight, which is extremely incredible because most people will be chasing the belt if they had that opportunity. He's chasing something different. You know, I mean, I guess he did have that opportunity to win the interim, but I would like to see Dustin Poirier win a fight and get handed that belt officially, the lightweight belt. Clearly, the big news from last weekend was Francis Ngannou knocking out Stipe Miocic in the second round, which now leads to a John Jones fight potentially. If they can get it done, if the Dana White can get it done, John Jones instantly talking about money woes already. But that could arguably be the biggest selling pay-per-view of all time in the UFC. If John Jones versus Francis Ngannou. I mean, the images that we could see about John Jones, who is arguably the best complete fighter of all time in the UFC. Anderson Silva is obviously up there in his prime. But John Jones, since he stepped foot in the cage, I mean, really, there's been a few tests that he's had, but he's passed the test, and he's is you know, the one loss he has isn't really a loss, which we all know about. But John Jones facing, going up in weight to facing a Francis Ngannou. Think about the image, folks. Think about the image, folks. Jeez, what am I, 1,000 years old? Think about the image of Francis Ngannou
touching up John Jones, laying him flat on the mat. That is an image that I don't think anybody can dream of. You know, we've all seen the DC fights with John Jones and thought that maybe DC would be that guy. The Gustafson fight, the first one, the second one was boo. But the first one was, you know, arguably one of the best fights out there for John Jones. The OSP fight was interesting. And then you had the recent fights with Dom Reyes, which was a test, don't get me wrong. Anthony Smith, not so much. Thiago Santos as well was another test. But I don't know if John Jones was motivated to fight those guys. I mean, I really don't think he was motivated. I think he thinks he's levels above these guys, which made them more interesting for the fans. But I don't know if that made that interesting for John. Going up in weight class to face someone who has literally, besides Derek Lewis, everyone he's faced, he put out cold. I mean, that's crazy to me. Derek Lewis is the only one, and they were both very timid in that fight. And, you know, Francis, we know, came off a loss, and Derek Lewis was injured. That is the only fight that you could say that really wasn't Francis at his best. Stipe, even that first fight, he got Francis at his best at that moment. He needs to work on some skills, and he learned them. And it's crazy to see where the miles of improvement that Francis Ngannou has now. The takedown defense. That unfortunately, was the beginning of the end for Stipe. And Stipe, being as unbelievable as he is, we heard the breakdowns. We heard everybody talk about it. But the fact that Stipe landed that one punch in the second round, you know, going for the takedown the first round, getting stuffed, it was not a good situation for Stipe. He knew the fight had to be standing up. It just was going to take too much to take Francis down, and it wasn't going to be efficient. It wasn't going to be beneficial for him if he kept on working those takedowns and kept on getting stuffed. It wasn't like he was going to be able to wear down Francis as well. Francis was clearly, I don't know if it's the weight difference, whatever the case was, but clearly in a better situation than Stipe was this fight this time around. And Stipe, the worst thing that could have happened was tagging Francis flush in the face and getting overconfident. And it reminds me of, you know, you go back to some movies, some classic movies, some classic fight scenes where the hero takes a swipe at the villain and tags him, and the guy doesn't move. Like, look at Indiana Jones, the first Indiana Jones. He's got you that fight scene with the Nazi in the airplane, and they're, you know, Indiana Jones lands a strike, and the guy just doesn't move. That's what it was when Francis tagged, when Stipe tagged Francis. Square in the face and didn't move. It's incredible. So not only does Francis have immense power, he's got a huge chin. Because that was flush by Stipe. And you don't see many people land flush shots on Francis. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, the John Jones, Francis Ngannou, I think will be record-setting. And if not, I would still like to see a trilogy with Stipe if he chooses to. I mean, that he's fought 6-plus rounds with Francis Ngannou, Stipe Miocic has. I don't know if he wants to do that again. That takes a lot out of a man. He survived the first one. Second one, he didn't get through. So I don't know. That's a different game plan. And we'll see if he wants to go that route. The only other fight that I could see, Derek Lewis would be interesting of a rematch as well, but we all saw what happened the first time around, and that was a little disappointing. But let's get to our boy John Morgan, who had front row seats for one of the oddest situations in MMA history. And we have been dealing with some odd moments lately, and we're going to get into that and more. So here he is, John Morgan. This is The Fight Fan with your host, Pete Hoffman, and this is a very light weekend for UFC fans, but there has been so much going on in the fight world, and the news has been popping up, but there's also been fight cards as well, and we're being joined right now by MMA junkies, John Morgan, who is my favorite not only reporter, writer, but also play-by-play man too. So, John, thanks for joining. I appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me. And like you said, man, it's funny. When the UFC takes a week off, some people tune out. But, man, there's a whole lot of quality MMA going on right now. April's going to be a crazy month.
That's what I was saying. Bellator, listen, I don't want to knock any promotion at all. But sometimes I've seen Bellator, Scott Coker has really been trying to move the needle. And I always feel they fall flat. They're hitting home runs right now, left and right. The signings they're bringing in, the tournaments they're building. The fact that they're back on Showtime. Well, Coker's back on Showtime. I'm pumped for what they're building.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You kind of had to slip there, right? It feels like Strikeforce, right? You got Coker back on Showtime. But you're right; they're doing big things, and it's taken them a while to kind of build to this point. And they've kind of known behind the scenes, like, listen, it's going to take us a while to get here. You know, we've got to develop some homegrown talent. Do want to sign some free agents, which they've done, but they don't want to be seen as just an organization that uses retreads, if you will. So, you know, they've done some great things. And like you said, back on Showtime now or on Showtime for the first time for Bellator, but I think that's a good home for them and a good partner to have. Paramount Network, no disrespect, but it was the only sports property on there. It just didn't really fit in. It wasn't the right audience. So I think this is a much better play for them. And, yeah, you're right. You know, they've taken a few months off to get everything restructured, but they're back at it big time this month with some big fights.
Yeah, no, I'm super pumped for that. I'm super pumped for PFL. And I'm also super pumped to hear what the hell happened yesterday at CFC 94. I mean, that is, you've been in MMA, you've been in combat sports for a very long time. I mean, explain to me, I loved it. I loved you and CM Punk going back and forth, asking the crowd to find the finger. I love it all. But seriously, what happened and how can that be? How can they reward the victory to the opponent and not him for losing a finger?
Yeah, it really was a weird scene. I mean, honestly, it's one of the oddest things I've ever seen in my life. As you said, I've been covering the sport for a long, long time, and I've never seen something like this happen. And to be on the mic for it was interesting as well because, you know, normally as when I'm in my reporter duties, I can just sit back and watch, see how it all plays out and get all the details. Here, I'm trying to live commentate on what's happening is I'm trying to evaluate what it is. So what had happened was Hitek Liev, he was kicked in the hand earlier in the fight, and we think at that point his finger broke or dislocated at the very least. There was something wrong with his left hand. But then later on in the fight, in the second round, he got a takedown, took it to the ground, but his opponent, Devin Goodell, actually grabbed his glove, which is illegal. You can grab your own glove, but you're not allowed to grab your opponent's. And when he did, he yanked it. I mean, he was tugging on it for quite a bit. We were a little bit surprised. The referee didn't see the foul. Punk and I were both kind of saying, hey, how is he not seeing that right now? He finally lets go. But during that time that he had control of the glove, he pulled it so far, and that finger was already broken or dislocated, so it was so pliable that the finger went into the glove and folded backwards. And so when it folded backwards, it severed it. I mean, it folded all the way over. So at the end of the round, Hetag Kliev is the toughest man you've ever seen. This dude's a Terminator. His facial expression never changed, but we had a camera on top of it. I'm looking at my monitor, and I can see there's a finger missing. I'm like, and you know, I don't want to say his finger's gone and be wrong, and maybe I'm just seeing some kind of optical illusion or something. So I'm literally just saying this out loud. I'm like, is it missing? Like, what is going on there? Fortunately, the personnel that was inside the cage, they realized what had happened. The cut man was on top of it. They realized that the finger was folded back in the glove, but you could see the exposed bone at that joint. And so what they did was they ushered him out right away, took him to the hospital, left the glove on so they didn't cause any further damage to the joint. And then once they got to the hospital, they sliced it off and they were able to reattach it. Now he's going to have follow-up surgery to make sure the tendon healed and all that. But, you know, it looks at this moment like the finger's okay. But one of the craziest scenes I've ever seen in my life, one of the toughest men I've ever seen in my life. And to your point as well, so what happens is we don't know exactly how it all played out, right? So the referee awards correctly a TKO win to the opponent because basically Hetak Kliev cannot continue at that point. So that's a TKO win for Devin Goodell. But I think at this point, especially after going back and watching the tape and reviewing everything and talking to everybody involved, Hetak Kliev's team is going to appeal this. And to be honest with you, I think it'll be overturned. At worst, it's going to be a no contest. I think he might be awarded a disqualification victory, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was watching it and I saw your reaction and it was clear as day, and I'm surprised the ref did he not see the pulling of the glove? I mean, the UFC, the refs get a lot of crap, but they're pretty good with the tugging on the glove thing. They're pretty much on point with that most of the time. But this was obvious, and I'm surprised that they didn't pick up on that right away. So I would hope that's the case. I would hope that they turn it over, because you don't need to see someone lose for that. I mean, because I was trying to look back at the tape too. It got wedged in the glove just before the end of the round because I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you go back, it actually just came out just before we jumped on the phone here, but CFSC and their production crew, they actually went and put a video out on their YouTube channel that really takes frame by frame of exactly what happened. They point out all the moments. They have an extra camera angle that we didn't have live, that we didn't see, so they've worked that in there and really showed it kind of frame by frame. But yeah, that's exactly right. It just bent back. So it was already loose enough. I mean, normally the glove, you shouldn't be able to retract the finger into it. But because the glove was being really, truly yanked on, and because that finger was already pliable by either being broken or dislocated, whatever the case was, it was able to slip inside the glove. And then when it returned in place, basically the pressure on there just ripped it all the way off. And it's a great explainer that Brad Bolton did here at CFSC. He put it all together. Obviously it just happened last night, so he's been working on it and did a great job with it. You can really see what happened. And I think it does make a clear case for why it needs to be overturned. Like I said, at a minimum, it needs to be overturned to a no contest. Perhaps, like I said, even a disqualification. But yeah, just one of the craziest things you ever see.
I know it's amazing in a crazy way. And like we watch week to week, we see knockouts and strange knockouts and not strange knockouts. We've seen a lot of crazy highlights. A lot of fights recently have ended in odd fashions. We saw the Aljamain Sterling DQ, and there's been the controversy of, you know, should someone be rewarded a title for a DQ? I mean, that's a rule that's always been in place, and I've always known it, but it was disappointing how Aljo won. But I've had someone else on, Montel Griffin, I spoke to not too long ago, and he won the belt off of Roy Jones Jr., for a DQ as well. It was funny that I was just happened to talk to him. I scheduled the interview prior, and it was very interesting to hear his version of how he got the belt and how he walked around, and he felt like, I deserved this. I didn't do anything wrong, so I deserve this. Do you feel for Aljo in this situation at all?
I do. I really feel bad for Aljamain Sterling. Now, let me just say, I don't think that Aljamain has helped himself a whole lot. He leans too far into the comments and Twitter and lets himself, you know, feed the trolls, so to speak. I think because of that, you know, it just ends up looking bad for him. But I do feel bad for Aljamain Sterling because, as you said, I mean, as Montel explained, you know, nothing wrong. He did absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, he got clearly kneed by an illegal shot while he was on the ground. I mean, it clearly was affecting him. And he was ruled ineligible to continue. That's not his decision to make. You know, that's the doctor's decision to make. And because of that, it's a disqualification. But it's tough because what do you do at that point? I mean, there's nobody on earth that looks to him as a legitimate champion as you earned it. You know what I mean? It's more of just, okay, well, this happened, and yes, you had that belt. But at the same time, and I thought the way he explained it was great, you know, there were pictures on social media that were taken of him with the belt, and it wasn't him that posted it. It was some of his friends that posted it. He took a lot of grief for that, and he kind of explained it and said, well, listen, I mean, all these people had paid to come out and travel and be with me, and, you know, they came to my house afterwards. He left the belt in the cage. He didn't even grab it. His team grabbed the belt for him, took it home, and his friends were with him and said, listen, come on, man. You know, you've done so much to get here. You've worked your butt off your whole life to get to this moment. You know, it's not ideal, but you are the champion. And he is the champion. They say, you know, take a belt. So he took the belt out, and they wanted to take pictures with it and all that. And then that gets folded around as if he's celebrating, when in reality, all you're doing is just, you know, kind of having that moment with your friends and your family, who, of course, are going to want to try to console you and make you feel better. I actually heard Michael Bisping talking about this on his podcast, and I thought it was great. You know, he mentioned the night that he got knocked out by Dan Henderson, which is one of the worst nights of his career. He had friends and family in town, and they all came to see, and they didn't want to see him moping around, so they all went out. They went to a club, you know what I mean? They tried to have a good time. They tried to move on in life. And so I really, really do feel bad for Aljamain, because I just don't think there's any good way to go about it. I mean, nobody's going to recognize you as a legitimate champion, but at the same time, you've been working your entire life to get to that position. You should be able to enjoy it to some degree. It just feels like such an empty result for him, you know?
Who do you think threw the belt with more gusto? Was it Justin Gaethje or Aljamain Sterling when they won it?
Justin Gaethje was pretty good too, right?
Oh my God, yeah. I love it. I love it, man. And listen, John Morgan is joining us right now. And, you know, by the way, you seriously are my favorite. I know that you're always rewarded the award of the first question of the night for every fighter, for Dana, but rightfully deserved, dude. I think you are the best at what you do. But that being said, you've been around so long, and right now we have some of the craziest things going on in the UFC as far as the lightweight division, as far as Khabib retiring, as far as John Jones versus Francis Ngannou. Can you ever remember a time that the buzz is now really just starting to pick up?
No, man, listen, I appreciate those kind of words, but yeah, it really is. There's so much going on. It's intriguing, you know, the lightweight division being held up while the UFC kind of refused to recognize Khabib Nurmagomedov's retirement from the sport and the ensuing fights that are made out of that. There's so much talent at lightweight right now. And as you said, the John Jones, Francis Ngannou hype, I mean, that's kind of been discussed for a while. But then when Francis Ngannou goes out and performs like he did against Stipe Miocic the other night, I mean, now that really starts heating up. But then, of course, you know, you've got the argument going on in public with John Jones, you know, going on Twitter and saying that, you know, they got to show me the money and they got to pay me before we get this fight done. I mean, but yeah, there's so many big fights right now. And it's interesting, you know. We've had these eras of dominance, you know, where you look at guys like John Jones, who was dominated for a decade, you know, George St. Pierre, Anderson Silva, Demetrius Johnson, who kind of dominated over, you know, a generation of athletes. And it's amazing to see them at work, but it doesn't make the divisions quite as exciting, right? You know, I kind of look right now like in the women's division. I mean, the women's game is hot, and there's a couple real big title fights coming up, you know, on the horizon. But, you know, you look at like Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko and just how incredibly dominant they are. It's hard to get excited about challenger matchups because you don't really like anybody's chances, you know. So there's so much happening right now, and belts up for grabs and opportunities. It's a great time to be a fan of MMA. And, that, and like you said, and that's just the UFC. You got Bellator coming back. You got the PFL coming back finally after a year away. You got all this great action around the world. You know, one championship is going to be in prime time.
TNT, let's go.
For the first time. I mean, there's so much going on.
Yeah, and you can't forget about the boxing world, too. I mean, let's be serious, and I don't know how you view some of these fights. I know some of the gimmicky fights, not everyone's on board, but a lot of people watch them anyway. Obviously, the Ben Askren-Logan Paul fight that's coming up. Then you have, I mean, the fact that Frank Mir's jumping in the boxing ring, too, scares me. I mean, I just don't know what to expect with these guys. But it's crazy. It's you have Anderson Silva versus, what is it? Now I'm blanking on the name, but
Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Yeah, just came out. I mean, Silva's been talking about fighting boxing for all these years, and this is what he gets. It's incredible that these guys A, won't give it up, but also that the fans really want to see it, because without the fans, no one's going to want to watch Silva fight in a boxing match. But they're there.
Yeah, it is wild. You know, it's kind of funny too, that Triller Fight Club. They did a press conference in Las Vegas. Which was smart of them. They did it during UFC 260 fight week because they knew there'd be a lot of media in town, plus those of us that already live there. And look, I went to the press conference, and, you know, Jake Paul, is he a guy that I'm, you know, I believe in as a boxer? No, not necessarily, but he has taken training seriously, and he does get numbers. He gets eyeballs, and it's crazy. I mean, yeah, it's a freak show matchup, him and Ben Askren, but I'll be honest with you, I probably might have to tune in and watch it. You know, I just want to see how it all plays out. You mentioned, you know, Frank Mir getting in there, and it's wild. There's so much going on in combat sports, and like you said, boxing as well. And this Triller Fight Club is trying to come in and be kind of a disruptor, where they're doing, you know, concerts, and, you know, Snoop Dogg was there, and Oscar De La Hoya, I mean, announced that he's coming back.
I know.
Just absolute madness right now. But that's what it's all. And, you know, that's what's interesting about fight sport. You know, I've been a fan of the game for a long time, and you know, listen, I think there was a time where I was probably a little protective of the sport as well, where you say, oh, we can't have these crazy freak show matchups. But, you know, there was a time where people didn't understand that mixed martial arts and professional wrestling were different things, and I thought it was, at the time, it was important to differentiate and get people to understand that, hey, this is the real deal. Like, what is going on out there is not scripted, because, you know, this is years and years ago when mixed martial arts was first starting to emerge as a mainstream sport, and people just didn't realize it. Now, I think people get it. I think people understand that what's happening is real. When you see a man's finger severed in the cage, you know it's a real sport. So I think it's okay to kind of embrace a little bit of this, you know, freak show type fight, if you will. I don't want to see it all the time, and I don't necessarily want to see the UFC embrace that, because, you know, the UFC, to me, is the highest level of the sport. But, you know, if other organizations out there want to do a little, you know, craziness here and there, but it gets people to tune in. It gets people talking. It gets, you know, the mainstream sports outlets talking about combat sports. And hey, let's go with it.
Well, that's what I think Scott Coker was, not saying he was trying to go that route, but I always thought he was always trying to package together like the veterans of the sport that you really love to see fight, whether it's Frank Shamrocks, whether it's Cam Shamrock, whether it's Tito Ortiz, Chael Sonnen. He used to like package those fighters together. I'm like, I like that idea, but you can't showcase that anymore because the payoff isn't as good. I'm not saying that these freak show payoffs are any better, but you're not expecting to see a spectacle. You're not sitting there to be like, oh, this is going to be the most competitive fight of all time. You're going to be like, someone's going to get knocked out. Maybe. I don't know. Let's see what happens. And to be fair, I think Ben Askren's going to survive. I don't think he's probably going to lose, but I don't think he's getting knocked out.
Yeah, that's what I'm pretty excited to see about as well. I mean, for anybody that doesn't know, obviously Ben Askren, I mean, himself admits that his striking is poor. You know, he's like, I basically made it through my entire MMA career without needing striking because my wrestling and grappling were so good. So that's what's interesting, that it's a boxing match. I mean, look, if this was an MMA fight, Ben Askren wins all day, 100 times out of 100. You know, if it's a wrestling match, of course, he wins that 100 times out of 100. But, you know, boxing, that's not his area. You know, it is Jake Paul. This is something that he's been working on. So can it be, you know, can he get the upset here? But I think what you're saying is right, because I think the biggest thing is going to be what happens when he hits Ben Askren and Ben Askren doesn't go away right away. Because I don't think – I understand Ben Askren got dropped by the flying knee, and that was an amazing shot from Jorge Masvidal. But, you know, I would never say that it was lucky, but it's hard to land that with any sort of frequency. You know what I mean? Yes, you're intending to throw it, and yes, you're doing it for a reason, but to land that, you know, over and over would be very, very difficult to do. But he nailed it. He got it. But I don't think Paul's going to be able to go out there and touch the chin with one shot like that and put him away. So does he pace himself right? Does it, you know, is he able to carry on in the later rounds? I think that's what's going to be intriguing to see.
No question. I mean, let's be serious. Ben Askren is not shooting for a takedown versus Paul. It's just not happening. So that's the first thing that's going to happen. Askren's going to have a different game plan. And I really do think that Nate Robinson, I love the guy. I love watching him play ball, but he was going out there, and I know he worked on his boxing skills, but did he work on his defense? You know, that part of boxing is your defense, and I don't think he's ever trained like that, where Ben Askren has, even though his striking might not be there, he's had that training before over years. That's part of mixed martial arts, is training to defend yourself. So I do think it's going to be much more interesting and intriguing than the Nate Robinson fight. Another intriguing fight that is officially signed, I believe, by Dustin Poirier today. He signed it, and I believe that Conor is already officially in as well. But that rematch, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, July 10th. Now, it's interesting because a lot of people are like, oh, it's crazy they passed up Dustin Poirier for the title again. He's getting the raw deal. But he chose this. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're 100% right about that. And listen, that was my initial question as well. When it was announced, that Michael Chandler and Charles Oliveira would face off for the vacant lightweight title, I thought, okay, that's a great fight. And those are two very deserving candidates. But I want to know, was Dustin Poirier approached? Because if he wasn't approached, it would absolutely be an injustice by the UFC. I mean, what that man has accomplished, you know, throughout his career as well as recently, he deserves to be there. But they did approach him. They asked him if he was interested in it, knowing that the trilogy fight with Conor McGregor was on the table as well. And he said, listen, I want the Conor McGregor trilogy fight. And I think it's a smart one. You know, part of me, you know, wishes Dustin hadn't have taken that, because, listen, if Dustin loses this fight, it could be his title shot disappearing, you know. And I think Dustin has committed his life to this for so long that I'd love for him to, you know, to have an opportunity to win the undisputed UFC lightweight title, you know, not an interim title, the undisputed champion, to have that belt wrapped around his waist for at least one night. But at the same time, he's a family man, and this is prize fighting, and you're out there to make the most money possible. And to be honest with you, Conor McGregor is the biggest prize in combat sports. I mean, the man is an absolute global superstar, and regardless of the fact, you know, that if he's coming off a loss or that he's not a champion, more people are going to tune in and buy a Conor McGregor fight than they are a Michael Chandler versus Charles Oliveira fight. And that's just the reality of the situation. And Dustin Poirier realizes that. They have history together that dates back years. They're 1-1 in the series. They did big business together in the rematch. But I think the trilogy fight is going to do even bigger numbers. And, of course, Dustin Poirier will be financially tied into that as a partner, and he'll make a lot of money. And then if he wins, you know, then absolutely he would go face the winner of Michael Chandler and Charles Oliveira for the lightweight title. So he's not pulling himself out of the equation for the lightweight title. And, you know, he's just got to win this fight first. And I'm sure he feels confident he can do that after having done it earlier this year.
It's funny because I've spoken to, like I told you, like I've been having a lot of athletes on, speaking to them, and a lot of a lot of them got back into, not saying they weren't into MMA prior, but a lot of them got back into it because of Conor's reign and how he ran through the rankings and won his fights, and just his aura, his presence, the build up to all his fights. It was amazing. And I asked them after his loss if it changed anything, and they're all very confident. No, he's going to come back. He knows what he's got to do. He's still going to bring it, and I'm still going to watch it. So you're right. The trilogy, where I thought might have been a little lackluster because of how he got beat by Dustin Poirier, it's still going to be there. The numbers are still going to be there, and it's going to be crazy. And amazing enough to me, too, is that I love Dustin, and I think that was a title in itself. Even though he might not have won a belt, that was a title in himself. Now, my question to you is, what do you think will bring in bigger numbers, the Conor Dustin trilogy or the John Jones Francis Ngannou championship?
That's a tough one right there. You know, listen, the trilogy is going to do big numbers, no question about it. But yeah, I think John Jones Francis Ngannou, if they can get this thing done, it's going to be one of the biggest fights of all time. I mean, it just sells itself. I mean, Francis Ngannou, the baddest man on the planet, and it's not hard to sell that man as the baddest man on the planet. I mean, you just have to show a picture of him. You don't even have to show him in action. But, man, when you watch his highlights and you see the fact that he's been just tearing through opponents, knocking them out in the opening round, knocking them out in less than a minute, I mean, this dude is legit the scariest guy in the history of the sport. He really is. But John Jones is arguably the GOAT, arguably the greatest of all time. You know, I do rank him as the greatest of all time. I think he's the best fighter to have ever done this sport, and he's been dominating the light heavyweight division for a decade. I mean, you just don't see runs like that. He's destroyed everybody. So he's just, you know, he has the one loss, but we all know he's actually undefeated. You know, that was a ridiculous disqualification loss. So, you know, the undefeated greatest of all time, moving up, putting his legacy on the line, risking it all to face the scariest dude in the sport. I mean, that to me just sells itself. You know what I mean? That's huge. That's tough, man. It's tough. Conor's the proven draw. You know he's the global superstar. You know he's going to do big numbers. But, man, you put that UFC marketing machine behind a storyline like that, the GOAT moving up to face the baddest dude on the planet, it might do more.
Yeah, no, and I think that there was a tweet today that said that Dana and John Jones went out to dinner. It was very good. It's a good conversation. So there's no numbers that have
been. I hate to break it to you, but that was also posted on April 1st. Both those tweets. Unfortunately,
John, you got me. Damn it! I was so excited about that. But one thing I do want to get back to, though, is you mentioned how scary Ngannou is, and I agree with that. But I've also met him a couple times, and he is the sweetest guy in the world. Now, the first time that he faced Stipe, he was in our studio. He met my son. He picked him up, and he was the most sweetest guy in the world. He had a nice conversation with him. That's the amazing thing about Francis Ngannou, because he really is. When you talk to him outside of the cage, it's not a fight scenario. He's just this nice guy, but yet the doors close, and he literally murks people. He takes their souls. And to do what he did against Stipe, I mean, I have friends that are friends with Stipe and who literally have ghosted me now, because I don't think they want to talk about the fact that Stipe got hit and crushed the way he did, because no one has ever seen that before. We've seen Stipe lose, but to see a champion go out that way, to be arguably the best heavyweight of all time, and to be knocked out cold like that was just incredible.
Yeah, it really was. And everything you said about Francis is true. You know, he's really a soft-spoken, very polite guy behind the scenes. And, you know, his backstory, if you go into that, is just amazing. You know, grew up working in a sand mine in Cameroon and made his way to Paris and was homeless and living on the streets and, you know, walked into a gym because he wanted to be a boxer. And you know, there he met Fernand Lopez, who said, you know, listen, boxing maybe, but have you ever thought about MMA? And the guy was like, "What? I have no idea what MMA is. What is that? Show me that." And now he's a heavyweight champion of the world and, you know, potentially a global superstar if he can continue a reign like this. But you're right. What was most impressive about the performance against Stipe wasn't, you know, to me, the fact that he scored the knockout. I mean, we know he has power. We've seen that, right? The power has already been there. Nobody doubted that. But it was the fact of how patient he was. You know, he didn't force the fight. He knew that, hey, this could potentially go five rounds. I've got to be ready to go all five rounds. Cardio was a concern the first time they fought. I mean, he was absolutely gassed after the opening round and just had nothing left to give. And also, you know, he stuffs a Stipe takedown and then is able to turn and switch to the back and land punches as they move back. I mean, we saw a more complete Francis Ngannou. I think that's what has everybody excited right now. We already knew he was this guy who has ungodly power. But now it's like, oh, whoa, whoa. Now he's actually learning to fight, too. You know, he's not just using these natural gifts. Now he's got strategy. He's got patience. He's learning the grappling game as well. And that's what was so impressive about that performance. And again, like you said, against a guy proven like Stipe, you know, to see him handled that way, it was like, oh, man, who can beat this guy?
It was scary. My wife was sitting next to me, and when we saw the takedown, everybody in the room just kind of froze, like, oh my God, like that's amazing that happened, because I never thought Francis would do that. I didn't put my money down, but well, I did actually. But I did buy I picked Stipe. I was like, I think that Stipe is gonna be able to take Francis down again. And I think that's how their fight's gonna go. And it's gonna go another five rounds, and it'll be a great classic fight. But you know, Francis is, I don't think he's improved enough. Because we talked about Conor. We talked about like Conor McGregor, how when he faced Khabib, where it's like, oh, wait to see what Conor can do versus the takedown. That was the whole thing. And we saw Khabib was on a different level and was able to take Conor down, and we all talked about how people change the rematches are always the craziest thing, because I see that the improvement when you face somebody, when you've been in the cage with somebody for X amount of time, the advantage almost goes towards the person that lost, because they're able to improve. They're not going to let the same thing happen again. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, absolutely do, and that's the great thing about it. You know, when you've been the loser in that first matchup, not only do you know that you need to improve, you know exactly where you need to improve. You know, your deficiencies are shown clear to you, and that's what I always say: win or learn. You know, when you lose, you go out there and you make sure you learn the lessons. I mean, you are shown where your deficiencies are. This other gentleman on the other side of the cage showed exactly what you need to work on. Now, do you have the commitment level to do it? Can you make the adjustments? You know, can you get it done? We'll see. Francis Ngannou did all that. Now, it's crazy, because in the heavyweight division, you know, long reigns are not something we see very often. Obviously, you know, everybody in the heavyweight division has power, and one shot can change everything. So we'll see how long this reign can last. But I'm telling you, this guy is just, he's incredibly remarkable. As you said, he's a good guy. He's not going to do anything behind the scenes that embarrass you or that make you not like the guy. His style of fighting is unbelievable. And like I said, it doesn't take a hardcore combat sports fan to look at that guy and go, oh, I bet that's a really badass dude. I bet he can hurt people. You know what I mean? So he just sells himself, man. He's the total package. If this guy can put together some title defenses, you know, then you talk about his ties to the continent of Africa, where the UFC is still trying to make inroads over there. You know, MMA just became legal in France right before the pandemic, and the UFC wasn't able to get a show done. So now they can, you know, kind of grow the market in France as well with his ties there. So a lot of potential here for Francis Ngannou, where he can go if he can pick up a couple wins.
No question. And again, like I do think that between John Jones' star power and the fact that he's basically he's undefeated. Like you said, versus Francis Ngannou. And it's funny, because John Jones, I think, you know, with his, I don't want to take anything away from Anthony Smith, Dom Reyes, but the names weren't as big as we would have liked to seen in the light heavyweight division. So the fact that he's going up to face Francis Ngannou, who just saw, like, you know, took the belt off of Stipe, I think this pay-per-view is going to be record-setting for sure. And the fact that people can think anybody that doesn't like John Jones had the possibility that Francis Ngannou can knock him out, I think that's going to add more eyeballs for sure.
But, oh, it'd be massive. And I'll tell you what would make it even better. I mean, can you imagine if all the stars align and that ends up being, say, the first UFC event inside Allegiant Stadium, you know, the brand-new home of the Raiders in Las Vegas? I mean, wouldn't that be just an absolutely iconic moment for the sport? So we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, listen, John Jones is openly saying, I need to get paid, I deserve to get paid, and I agree with him. I mean, you were putting a legacy on the line. You were putting everything at risk. I mean, yes, you've dominated the sport for a decade, and like I said, I believe he's the greatest of all time. If he moves up, it gets absolutely just demolished in one round by this destroyer of men. I mean, yes, you can say, well, he moved up to heavyweight, that wasn't really his division, but it's just hard to erase that memory out of your head of seeing a guy get laid out unconscious. So he is putting his legacy on the line. He absolutely deserves to get paid, as does Francis. So Fingers crossed they can get the numbers all worked out on this because I think it's a fight that, people really want to see.
No question. Being joined by John Morgan. Only a few more minutes because I know you got to go. But I could talk to you forever. Endless. It's funny because we talk about, like, you know, John Jones going up in the heavyweight division, potentially getting knocked out. It's funny, Izzy, when he went up to the light heavyweight, like, I got to be honest, like, it didn't really do much for it didn't hurt his career. Like, he didn't get knocked out. Jan Blachowicz did what he had to do to win. And it didn't really hurt Israel Adesanya in any sort of fashion. I'm still excited to see what he could do in the 185 division, you know?
Yeah, it was kind of a disappointing performance because I feel like if he had done a little bit more, the output would have been a little bit higher, he could have won the fight. I mean, you're right. The risk was there that we thought, hey, Jan Blachowicz is a big, powerful man. If he lands clean, you know, he can hurt Israel Adesanya. That didn't really happen. You know, we saw some takedowns and some dominant position late in the fight, in the later rounds. But it wasn't anything that, like you said, just kind of ruined the guy's reputation. I mean, it definitely, you know, took a little bit of shine off, took a little bit of the luster off, you know, that where you think, oh, this guy, you know, because there was talks if he won that light heavyweight title that he would move up to heavyweight and he would try to take the heavyweight title, which is crazy. I mean, can you imagine if he moved up to heavyweight to do it? And can you imagine if it was maybe against a John Jones who had just beaten Francis Ngannou and there had all, you know, I mean, there were so many possibilities of what could happen. So, you know, the path got moved a little bit and it, like I said, knocked a little bit of a shine off. But Israel Adesanya is still absolutely a star. He took the risk, and that's what you got to do. You know, you got to risk it to achieve greatness. And it didn't pay off for him now, but I think there's still plenty of big moments on the horizon for Israel Adesanya.
So you have to clarify something. Did I get got with this as well? Is Nate Diaz fighting Leon Edwards?
That is happening.
So that's real. Okay, now I got nervous.
Yeah, that one was crazy. That one shocked me. If anybody says they saw that fight coming, they're lying to you. I did not see that matchup coming, but I like it.
Dude, it's going to be huge. And you think about Leon Edwards, who has basically been off the grid for quite some time now. In his last fight, you know, the no contest, how that ended, the disappointment with Bilal Muhammad. You know, everyone was super stoked to see Leon Edwards back in the cage. To have Nate Diaz fight him, that you couldn't have asked for anything better because he's not going to get a title shot off of that fight. But now he gets a prime fight.
Yeah, I love the matchup. It really did. Like I said, it kind of came out of left field for me. I wasn't anticipating it, but as soon as it was announced, I really, really liked it. And the reason I didn't see it is just that, you know, Leon Edwards, as great as he is, and he is great, and he's had this snake-bitten year where, you know, COVID really did a number on his opportunity. It looked like he was going to get a number one contender fight and potentially a title shot and just delays and cancellations and everything moved it all around. And then he's supposed to fight Khamzat Chimaev, and that doesn't play out. It's just crazy sequence of events for him. But he's just not a big name in the sport, unfortunately. You know, he doesn't have quite the drawing power that other people do. And Nate Diaz, being that superstar that he is, he's looking for the biggest money fights available, right? Nate Diaz doesn't care one bit about winning a UFC title. You know, he's one of these money fights as well. He knows whenever he fights, people are going to tune in and he's going to make cash. So the fact that he was willing to kind of take this fight, I'm still interested. We haven't heard from Nate yet as to what got him motivated about this. So I'm kind of interested to hear what it is. You know, is it something about the style of Leon Edwards? Because I could see how it might be appealing to him. You know, what was it about the challenge of this one? That's not being kind of, like I said, the global iconic superstar that he is. But for Leon Edwards, a guy that's struggling for respect. Like I said, people just don't give the man the credit that he deserves for being the quality fighter that he is, the impressive streak that he's put together. He just doesn't have that drawing power. You know, he's not a big trash talker by any stretch of the imagination. And he just hasn't gotten it. You know, the biggest love I think he got was when he got slapped by Jorge Masvidal, you know, and that's not really the kind of reputation you want. So we'll see. If he can win this fight, I think people will stand up. Because if he wins, he can win it in spectacular fashion. I think he absolutely can win this fight. That's a moment for everybody to kind of look up and say, oh, this guy's for real. Let's see what's next for him. And I think it'll get him a big fight next. So I love this pairing. It shocked me. Was not anticipating it, but I'm super excited for it.
Three-piece in a soda. No one's ever going to forget that with Jorge Masvidal. I mean, and how do you feel about the match? We talked about the rematches, that you give the edge to the person in the second fight. You kind of give the edge to the opponent that lost last time. I don't feel the same way. I think Kamaru Usman is unbelievably talented, but I do like Jorge Masvidal in the full camp.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I feel the same on that one, too. You know, we talked about how rematches can favor the guy that lost the first time around. I just think stylistically, Usman is a nightmare for Masvidal, man. I really do. I think it's just a bad stylistic matchup for him. And like you said, you get Masvidal in a full camp. That's why Usman wants to fight. Usman knows, look, Masvidal is a superstar. He is going to bring eyeballs to the sport, and he's going to bring eyeballs to the fight, and that's going to be pay-per-view buys, and that means money. And so that's why he wanted to fight. But I just think it's a bad matchup for Masvidal, if I'm being honest. So I favor Usman pretty heavily in that fight.
Yeah, I agree. John Morgan, thank you so much for the time. I could talk to you again forever. You're unbelievable at what you do. Is there anything that you want to promote, or is there any fight or anything like that that I'm missing that we should be talking about that I just missed? Is there breaking news? What do you got for me? Tell me something.
April is the craziest month in MMA history. I really do think it is. Like you said, one championship on TNT. Bellator's back, PFL is back, UFC is busy, full fans are coming back later this month in Florida, so it's going to be unbelievable. And be sure and check out CFSC on UFC Fight Pass. We don't have severed fingers every time, but we have some pretty good fights. It's me and CM Punk on the broadcast. We always have a good time, so if you've never checked that out on UFC Fight Pass, definitely check out CFSC as well.
John, you are absolutely the best. Thank you. Enjoy the fights tonight.
For sure, man. Obviously, you know, my schedule's busy, but I'm always happy to talk MMA. It's not hard to get me to start fights, you know?
I appreciate it, man. Be safe. Enjoy the fights tonight, all right?
All right. Thanks, brother.
Thank you to John Morgan for hopping on. That was awesome. I could honestly, every time I talk to him, I could talk to him forever. Just because he's just a knowledge of fights, and it's just fun, dude. Like, if you like the fighting game, John Morgan's the guy, you know? He really is. I mean, listen, there's other guys too. Kevin Ioli's great too, but John Morgan is just the man. That being said, thank you for checking this out. Listen, it's an off week for UFC. There is a pay-per-view Friday, but a Showtime fight on Friday for Bellator. So if you listen to this on Saturday, you missed it. But it's a decent enough card to go check out. And there's just other things going on. Again, April is crazy this month. It's not just about the UFC, which they have great fights, but the Triller stuff, PFL's returning, Bellator's back, CFFC, UFC Fight Pass has so much stuff. If you guys are interested, like, here's the thing, like, we talk about all the time about how to get the maximum bang for your buck when it comes to sports. I don't know how to do it. I really don't. But DAZN, they don't put out enough events. But if they did, that would be worth it. $9.99 a month is good, because when the title fights come, when the big fights come on DAZN, it's worth. I get $9.99 a month because I'm grandfathered in. Even $20 a month is not bad to do that. Because $70 a fight is crazy, which is what UFC is doing right now. But DAZN's good, but to catch everything, if you want to catch it later on, to watch it through UFC Fight Pass, you know, a couple weeks later, a month later, is not the worst thing in the world either. You can do that. So if you're thinking about that, it's like, I forget how much it is a year, but it's a yearly thing, and you get to watch everything through UFC Fight Pass eventually. And then you have all these little offsets, the CFFC, the island fights, you know, Roy Jones Jr. boxing. You get all this stuff. You get a ton of old footage, too, if you want the history of UFC. Everything is there. So, you know, while I'm sitting there, you know, promoting the fights, you know, you can go watch all the other stuff, too. So it is, if you're interested in that sort of thing, that is the way to go about it. If you're not into buying fights and watching them live, you could always go back that way. We have tons of cool things to catch up on. And we'll be back next week when UFC does have a new fight card. So we will be back next week with more of The Fight Fan. Thanks again for following me at The Hot WFAN, at The Fight Fan WFAN. We will talk to you guys next week. See ya! We'll be right back.